I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And I'm Trevor Anderson here, chart manager, /editorial liaison. I don't have like a fancy title like Gary, co-director. I guess I could be like, what, junior director?
You get a word that's not even English. That's pretty cool.
Liaison? Oh, okay. I guess that's French. That's French, yeah.
This is the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast on a really nice day here in New York City. We're recording this on Tuesday, April 11th. So, of course, it's so nice. We're in a windowless room.
Yeah. I wish this was going to have a video component so you guys could see. We're literally in an archive. Actually, a lot of the Billboard, well, basically all the issues of Billboard ever dating back to the William McKinley administration. That's back actually before McKinley, whoever's president before McKinley.
So we are here because we love the charts so much instead of being outside. A really nice day for the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Lots to get to this week. We're going to run down, as always, the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100, which this week includes Kendrick Lamar. He debuts really high. Also the highest charting country hit in 4 years from Sam Hunt. Bruno Mars still in the top 10, and that's going to be the focus of our interview this week with John McMahon from Atlantic Records. He'll be stopping by to do a bit of a deep dive on Bruno Mars coming up, and we'll flash back 32 years to the number one song on the Hot 100 this week. Not quite far as back as we were just saying, only 1985.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Injection,
fellas. I don't know if anyone knows, Trevor, but they come in here and do that live every week, and it sounded the exact same every single week.
That's, you know, when you're masters of harmony like they are. You can just do it on a dime.
All right, here's this week's top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100.
Number 10. Number 9. Number 8. Number 7. Number 6. Number 5. Number 4.
girly I can get, cause she don't get too many likes. A curly headed cutie I could turn into my wife. Wait, that means forever, ever, hold up, never mind. Oh, I smell
jewelry. Number three.
So bright, strawberry champagne on us. Lucky for you, that's what I like. That's what I like. Lucky for you, that's what I like. That's what I like.
Be humble. Number two.
Sit down. Be humble. Sit down. Be humble. Bitch, sit down. Be humble. Sit down.
And number one.
Push and pull like a magnet. Oh, my heart is falling too. I'm in love with your body. Last night you were in my room. Now my bed sheets smell like you. Every day discovering something.
And number one for an 11th week on the Billboard Hot 100, Ed Sheeran, Shape of You. Trevor, it's one of only 22 songs all time to have led for at least 11 weeks. And here's the stat that I like. I think it's kind of fun. It's one of only three songs, Shape of You, to be number one for at least 11 weeks by a solo male and no accompanying acts. Just literally one solo male artist.
One guy.
So Elton John, Candle in the Wind, Something About the Way You Look Tonight, 1997-98, led for 14 weeks. Eminem, Lose Yourself, 12 weeks in 2002-2003, and now Ed Sheeran with Shape of You. So Elton, Eminem, and Ed have done that.
Gary always finds a great way to find these sort of, like, Snapple cap kind of facts. Yeah, they all of them start with E. Who would have?
I was going to say they've done it with ease. That's how they've made it look.
And I mean, no shame for number two this week as well. Ed obviously stays number one, but we get a nice debut at number two this week. Kendrick Lamar roaring onto the chart with the new song "Humble" from the album. I love this album title. The album is "Damn." It's just "Damn." Coming out on Friday, this Friday, April 14th. And I wonder if he almost like called it that because I guess if he like wins album of the year or something, they'll have to be like, and the album of the year is "Damn." Just how beautiful a sound would that be coming from, like, I don't know, Reba McEntire at the Grammys or something?
I feel a little more careful now on who accepts that category announcing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Grammys are, they might be sweating a little bit. We'll see.
But it's the biggest, the highest charting, the highest debuting rap hit since 2010. So that's when Eminem, again, it all goes back to Eminem this week, apparently. Love the Way You Lie, featuring Rihanna, debuted at number two in July 2010. There hasn't been a rap song debut that high until this week with Humble. What is, because Kendrick's had a bunch of hits. This is his biggest hit as a lead. What do you think, Trevor, is so big about the song that made it have such a big debut? Is it the album coming out? Is it the song itself, combination? What do you think?
I think, I'll put it sort of in that Adele camp. Adele Atkins, the huge hit singer. In a way, I think for Kendrick, the best promotional marketing that he could have for this album was the fact that his last album was To Pimp a Butterfly. And, that would topped so many critics' lists for 2015. Really, a lot of people, there's no official count, but probably was the second place finisher on Album of the Year night for Grammy. Of course, Taylor Swift won the award, and it really seemed to kind of be the biggest album of 2014, which people really thought was Taylor's versus the most acclaimed album of 2015, which was his. But just like, we saw Adele with 25, the way it blew up on the charts. I mean, a lot of that came from the fact that the album before was 21 and people really loved it. So I think, Kendrick kind of had been appreciated in critical circles, as most rap artists probably are, before he had blown up. But now that he made the mainstream jump over last album with To Pimp a Butterfly, debuting at number one pretty easily, people love that. The Untitled Unmastered kind of, demo outtake set that debuted at number one as well. So I think people, everyone from critics to fans to everybody is really coming around, and now you got the new single. Everybody jumps right on it and blows it up.
Is it the message of the lyrics too? You think that's playing into it?
Yeah, because Kendrick, I think I don't want to say I'm a Kendrick expert, but I think it's one thing. I think it's one thing that people really like about him, because for so long, a lot of the rap was about I got this, I got that, I can do this, I got bling, I got girls, I got cars, right. I got, you know, money to, I can, you know, buy a helicopter, burn it up, and, you know, still make my 8 o'clock dinner reservation downtown at the best restaurant that you've never heard of because you can't go. But I think people love that Kendrick is, you know, successful, obviously, and one of the most respected MCs in the game, but he doesn't let that go to his head. He's not, he doesn't get too crazy. He's still, you know, is down to earth, down with the people. I think the same thing with Chance the Rapper. That's why people, I think, like him as well.
Right.
You know, we see that he's doing really well, gotten all these, you know, the streaming album hits, the Grammy Awards, and still finds time to help Chicago public schools and things like that.
You talk about someone who's even mixing, not rap, obviously, but spoken word music. Sam Hunt in the top 10. You just heard Body Like a Back Road. Not on that song, but Take Your Time, his hit from a couple years ago,
and
has spoken word in it.
Yeah, and Body Like a Back Road has that kind of DJ Mustard, like that little, that hey, like, you know.
I can't
do it, but I know, everyone knows that. Like, when you hear it, it's like the little, like, you know, the little, hey, 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 in the background, like,
yeah,
in the hook.
Right.
It's there, too. I mean, who would have thought, you know, sort of a DJ Mustardy kind of sound to be on a country song, you know?
Yeah, well, Sam Hunt has been mixing sounds, a little R&B, a little pop, country, since he started just a few years ago. He has his first top 10 on the Hot 100 this week. It's the first country song to even be in the Hot 100's top 10 since Cruise by Florida Georgia Line almost 4 years ago. And we all know what a big hit Cruise was. It's actually the record holder for most weeks at number one ever on the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart, 24 weeks at number one.
6 months.
Just about 6 months. But it crossed over, a lot of pop airplay.
And again, I mean, Florida Georgia Line, they got Nelly on that remix. Right? They merge in sounds too.
Right. What's also kind of notable about the Sam Hunt song is it's hit the top 10 without being on Billboard's pop songs chart, which is based on top 40 airplay. So that points to sales and streaming are really driving the song. No pun intended. Body Like a Back Road. That's what's driving it. But it's actually the fourth biggest selling song of 2017. And I think that might surprise people that might think, obviously, Ed Sheeran's going to be up there, but other pop stuff, maybe something by Drake, a country song that you're probably not hearing on your local top 40 radio station, is the number four selling song of 2017 so far. We're in April already, mid-April.
You know, a good-looking country male singer is, I mean, girls love their Luke Bryan and their, you know, other people I can't think of. And so I think if you get that right sound with Sam Hunt, he's got that right look, I mean, that, you know, that's a cash cow waiting to happen.
All right, let's get to this week's insider interview here on the podcast. We're talking about Bruno Mars. You heard him at number three on the Hot 100 with That's What I Like. Actually moved back a notch this week from number two, but it made gains across the board. Kendrick just happened to push him back this week with his debut at number two. So this song, That's What I Like, has really been gaining for weeks. It's been the top airplay gainer, making the biggest gains in radio airplay for six out of the last 7 weeks, become a huge hit from the 24 Karat Magic album. Let's talk to John McMahon again from Atlantic Records. He was here a couple weeks ago talking mostly about Ed Sheeran. We're going to go deeper with what John's working at Atlantic. We'll also get into some other acts that he's promoting as well. But we'll kick things off with John talking about Bruno Mars here on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Can I take my time? Can I take my time? Oh, hey, hey, hey. I got a condo in
John McMahon, welcome back.
Thank you,
the Bill Porter Chart Beat podcast. We liked you so much the first time.
Yay.
We wanted to have you
give you a repeat.
I'm ready.
So, yeah, last time we were talking about Ed Sheeran, all the success. There's other stuff you guys are promoting and having huge success with. Right there with Ed in the top 5, top 10 of the Hot 100, Bruno Mars. You're two hits deep now from 24 Karat Magic. Same thing we were talking about last time about Ed. You put out this album by someone who's already a superstar. Two huge hits right off the bat. Expectations for this album and these singles, and especially since Bruno's gone a little bit more R&B this time from his slightly more pop sound of the past.
Yeah, Bruno is such a... he's secretive about what he does, and he takes so long to go through the whole recording process, and you never know quite what you're going to get, but you know it's going to be brilliant. You know it's going to be amazing because the first two albums were like career... milestones that, he was putting out massive hit after massive hit. And, on his first album, coming off the first album, he was, already starting to tour in arenas. And he was such a brilliant live performer. The new album, he was telling us all along, was going to be much more R&B influenced, maybe a little throwback vibe and feel here and there. So we were prepared for that, though, because when you think about When I Was Your Man from the previous album,
right?
And that had this kind of like classic R&B, Sam Cooke kind of vibe and feeling to it. Bruno is like a master of having a throwback kind of DNA in his songs, but still sounding like they're super current and nobody else sounds like that at that moment. And so we were expecting there was going to be that kind of element to it. We ended up going to see him at a private show in Connecticut, and he wasn't going to perform the first single, 24 Karat Magic. And then I guess at some point at the end, he decided to. 60 Minutes was recording him that night for a feature that they did that ran. Huh. And he ended up doing 24 Karat Magic to close the show, and the audience like lost it. It was just like this epic Bruno Mars performance. And then, we heard the rest of the album. We're like, holy, what? This is unbelievable. So 24 Karat Magic, dropped at radio and, similar to Ed, but obviously before Ed, because it was back in October. Every radio station, hit it at Pop and Rhythmic Radio and pretty much Hot AC too. And it exploded at radio. Streams went nuts. Top of the charts on iTunes. And, it was clear, like, Bruno Mars is back. And then, everyone wants to see Bruno perform live. So Bruno, did a bunch of big TV performances, and people were, completely blown away. And, New Year's Eve, from what I understand, I wasn't there, but he performed a couple of shows, private shows, New Year's Eve weekend, and, like, the roof blew off of the place when Bruno performed. And at the after parties, they were playing 24 Karat Magic. And it was just, like, this mega anthem that had all the Bruno fans, all the young kids that were, doing musically, pieces to it. And, that was part of, we're coming off Uptown Funk, of course.
Right.
Which was his previous song with Mark Ronson.
That seemed like the turning point in his music once he realized either that's the sound that he was gravitating towards now and just how huge that song was. It kind of made sense. I can probably go in this direction and be successful with it.
Yeah. That song, broke a lot of records. And it's I'm sure for an artist, it's got to be a little challenging and difficult to know that you're coming off of one of the biggest records, say, in a decade,
right?
And sure. The biggest record, he says it, the biggest song of his career. Let's call it what it is. And you got to at least not necessarily top it because it's hard to top that, but you got to show up. And he really did on 24 Karat Magic. And the funny thing is that song dropped on October 7th, and just today I look at iTunes every 30 minutes. But that song still will not die. It is still like a cultural thing that shows the power of like Bruno Mars. Like he's still got it, like in a major way.
Well, that's what I like. the new single, is actually charted even higher on the Hot 100 than 24 Karat Magic. And it feels like that. Grammy's performance and the Prince tribute and him doing that song, it feels like it just kind of took the whole album, and that's what I like, to a higher level that maybe the album had already been at that point.
Yeah, and it feels like, you know, for people who have somehow missed this over the past couple of years, like that Grammy's performance in particular was like the wake-up call. Like, if you didn't know Bruno Mars could perform, like, I know people, you know, my Twitter feed, obviously, my Facebook feed, people like, I didn't know he could do that. I didn't know he was that good. I mean, that seemed like, you know, the wake-up call for at least the last group of people who out there missed it. This is, you know, enormous.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It is, everyone was waiting for it, because, and that's why they saved it for the end of the broadcast, right, the Grammys. But, you know, he was basically, like, channeling Prince in that performance, and it's kind of strange, but even the That's What I Like performance was just wow. But then the Prince performance was something totally different, and you guys hit the nail on the head too. It's the fact that the public is showing its love of Bruno Mars and its love, you know, especially of the song of That's What I Like, is really gratifying for us, and super great for Bruno Mars, because he only likes to be on top and he deserves it.
It's also interesting because it's such a throwback, like early 90s kind of R&B sound. And I don't know if you're going with Versace on the Floor as a future single. Has that been discussed yet? It has that same kind of vibe. It feels like an old Boyz II Men song from the early 90s.
Yeah, it has. It has been discussed. When we put out 24 Karat Magic, we also had put out another song on iTunes and Spotify for fans. It was like, you know, quote unquote instant grat track,
right,
to get people to, you know, pre-order the album, and also to, you know, give fans a taste of what's going to come. You know, it's the whole point. People at radio, and I think in general, loved it. It streamed, it sold, and radio stations started playing it, and we're never a label to like look a gift horse in the mouth and say, you know, don't play a song, because it's just, they're spreading, you know, great music to his fans, and you can't be mad at that. But at the same time, you want to try to let the public speak when the album drops to figure out what the next single is going to be, because the public ultimately decides.
Right.
Like, they're the ones that say, no, this is our favorite song. You know, we don't like that. That's a cool song. Thanks for letting us get a taste. But actually, we all love this one more. And so Versace got played and is still getting played on a handful of stations. But we're really kind of in deep on That's What I Like. And it's got so much life left in it. It's going to go certainly until the beginning of the summer.
Right.
There's no way it's not going to go, you know, 5-6 months, the way it feels. That, you know, we're a long way off of thinking about the next song.
Maybe something more up-tempo for the summer?
Maybe something more up-tempo for the summer. And I don't know if you could... Do you guys see the video for That's What I Like? Video is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's a game changer of a video.
It's more like performance art, like the Prince performance.
Correct. Yeah, it's just him dancing, like basically, you know, filmed on a green screen. But this guy's, like, moves. Like, he's dancing the entire video. And it's just such a cool visual, like, eye catcher that, you know... He's really proud of it, and so are we. It's pretty sick.
Just you know, there's some retro R&B that's sort of maybe surprisingly working at top 40 now, with Love on the Brain from Rihanna, and That's What I Like. Feels like we're kind of hitting this retro vibe that some superstar acts are really tapping into.
Yeah, kind of weird too, because I mean R&B, you know, current R&B, you know, in a general sense is having a hard couple years as pop and dance and everything have taken back over. But yeah, I mean this. Going back to, obviously, the classic era seems to be a winning strategy, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think any great songwriter will probably tell you that there's not a lot that you can do that in some way hasn't been done in the past. you know, there's the traceable roots of the past, you know, ingrained in probably every great song. You know what I mean? And it's funny because Bruno, when he was on 60 Minutes, you know, he talked about, you know, he said that, you know, people are coming up to him and saying, oh, you know, Bruno's music sounds, it's got like a Prince influence. Oh, it's got a Michael influence. Oh, you got the James Brown thing in there. He's like, of course, those are my idols. Those are the people that I worship. Those are the artists that I grew up wanting to emulate. I mean, all of them from their musicianship, their songwriting, their performances live, and the songs ultimately were some of the greatest, you know, music created in the modern era. And obviously with those artists, like Bruno has an R&B and soulful, you know, just bloodstream. So I think that we're actually fortunate when you have artists that are willing to go back and be influenced by some of the greatest music of all time and put it into the DNA of the music that they do for this generation. I think it's a blessing.
Never mind. Oh, I spy with my little eye a girly I can get, cause she don't get too many likes. A curly headed cutie I could turn into my wife. Wait, that means forever, ever, order, never mind.
You're having success with Kyle, I Spy. That's doing really well at Rhythmic Radio, making inroads of pop.
Yeah, it's actually doing great at Urban too. It's headed into the top five at Rhythm, and it was a song that was kind of floating out there online and on iTunes and streaming, and there was like a bidding war over this artist, and rightfully so, because the thing was just inside. I remember the week that we signed it. It was actually inside the top 10 on iTunes and inside the top 10 on Spotify, U.S. Top 50. Like, Today's Top Hits is a big deal because that's as the most followers of any list on Spotify. But the U.S. Top 50 is the actual most streamed songs in this country.
Yeah.
And it was inside the top 10 with no airplay. There were, like, literally, like, two little secondary stations in out west and a couple of small markets that were playing it. But other than that, no one else. And it's top 10 on iTunes and Spotify. So every label was saying, we need Kyle on our label. And we were fortunate to get him. And it exploded at Rhythm. And then at Top 40 Radio, it started getting all this organic play from stations that lean a little bit Rhythm, for sure. But the song is mainstream sounding enough for a hip-hop record.
It's got a nice like bounce to it that's easy to follow.
It does. It really does. So it's debuted at Pop Radio now. And at Urban is going to be inside the top 10 like any day now as well. And that's another like kind of rare feat that we're fortunate and really proud of being able to accomplish at Atlantic, is being able to work songs sometimes from format to format and sometimes simultaneously at all formats. Like, it's a rare thing to be able to impact a song and get it played on three formats at the same time, because sometimes the pop stations feel, it's too hip-hop for us.
Right.
Or the hip-hop stations are like, that's too pop for us.
Yeah.
But when everyone, like, signs up at the same time and says, we're in, it's really rewarding.
I mean, you see those streams, it's kind of hard to deny, but radio realizes people like the song.
Yeah, it's number two Spotify U.S. Top 50 right
only
now.
Only because it's number one.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. That's true. And Bruno's number three. Hey, yeah, it's not so bad to be Atlantic Records.
Flo Rida Cake is off to a good start as well. Flo Rida is really having a nice run. My house just kind of became maybe a bigger hit than anyone expected last year, and now he's got more music out.
Yeah. People always kind of forget, like, the past decade he's been out, like, Flo Rida has been a consistent, like, you know, every 6 months it feels like there's a Flo Rida song that's doing well. Like,
yeah, if you look at, like, male artists with the most top tens this decade, he's right up there with, like, Timberlake, and maybe that is kind of surprising. Yeah. To people of how consistent he really has been.
It is true. Like, he's sold over 100 million singles. I mean, there's not a lot of artists that are, you know, on the radio and, you know, contemporary music that have sold that many singles and had so many top tens, as you mentioned. But Flo, My House, people at radio, they played it. It started more at rhythm than pop, which when Flo Rida broke, he started at rhythm and urban with Low. And then as he became more and more mass appeal and right round and, you know, good feeling, he became this, you know, pop, you know, superstar. And then when we came back to GDFR, you know, a couple of years ago, that was much more like a rhythm record, like a hip-hop record. It had Sage the Gemini on it. It had this whole, like, hip-hop breakdown in it that was getting played, you know, like, you know, you could play in a strip club, you know what I mean? It was one of these songs that was not necessarily pop. But it blew up and became, like, a huge record at Top 40 radio as well. And that set the stage for My House, which did, you're right, Gary, become, you know, that was even bigger than we anticipated.
Yeah.
Because that spent 3 weeks at number one at pop and was quadruple platinum and easily one of his biggest songs of his career. So that put him back on the map as, you know, where radio was like, Flo Rida? Yeah, it's probably going to be a hit. It's probably going to be a hit. And so right now with Cake, which we decided to chase because of the streaming, because Flo Rida has, we have like a strategy of dropping Flo songs like between singles. He'll drop something else just to, you know, satisfy the fans. And when you have, you know, a couple of different things out there that are floating that you're not chasing at radio, you can see which ones are going to raise their hand or not. And we have made like a strategic decision along the way each time as to whether or not we're going to go. And this is why we're, you know, going after Cake, because the fans are saying we love this song. So yeah, it debuted at pop and it's on the biggest stations in the country, and now rhythm's starting to go on it, and it just feels like a great Flo Rida song going into the springtime. You know, it's just got that bounce to it, as you said.
Yeah, he's hit that sweet spot kind of between hip hop and pop with rap, and maybe some rap purists, maybe it's too pop for them, but it works pretty well commercially.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, Flo is the one guy that when he performs at any of his paid dates or he does one of these, you know, big radio shows, Jingle Ball show, or for any of the big stations out there, he's the one act that can go out there where you know that he's going to do a 30 or 45 minute set and it's going to be all number one songs and the crowd is going to be singing along to every single lyric, from the 14-year-old girls to the, you know, 42-year-old moms. They all know the lyrics to all of his songs. And then he's going to, you know, stage dive into the audience and they're going to go bananas. And he's going to like steal the show from almost whoever's on the show. So that's pretty cool. You know, the Flo Rida still has that, you know, sizzle.
You're going to be busy for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, we feel, fortunately, knock on wood, that 2017 has really, we came out of a cannon, you know, with Ed Sheeran and Bruno Mars at the top of the year. We feel we have like all pistons firing right now, you know, and we're really thrilled.
Congratulations, John. Continued success going on through 2017 and beyond with all these huge Atlantic acts.
Awesome. Thanks, Gary. Thank you, guys.
And flashing back, we'll leave Bruno Mars in the present, take a trip back to 1985. This week we're going to talk about what was number one on the Billboard Hot 100, which was the all-star charity single We Are the World. Really, as far as the U.S. charts are concerned, really one of the first of its kind to have this nice supergroup of recording artists. Just, we're going to run through a quick list of everybody who basically had a standout solo on that record. Get ready. This is a record that the following people were all on. We got Dan Aykroyd, Harry Belafonte, Lindsey Buckingham, Kim Carnes, Ray Charles, Bob Dylan, Sheila E., Bob Geldof, Daryl Hall, and John Oates, James Ingram, Jackie Jackson, LaToya Jackson, Marlon Jackson, Michael Jackson, Randy Jackson, Tito Jackson, Al Jarreau, Waylon Jennings, Billy Joel, Cyndi Lauper, Huey Lewis and the News, Kenny Loggins, Bette Midler, Willie Nelson, Jeffrey Osborne, Steve Perry, the Pointer Sisters, Lionel Richie, Smokey Robinson, Kenny Rogers, Diana Ross, Paul Simon, Bruce Springsteen, Tina Turner, Dionne Warwick, and Stevie Wonder. All on one song.
It basically was all of the USA for Africa.
It really was. Shout out, unfortunately. Crazy enough, Janet Jackson was the only Jackson not asked to be on the song. She wasn't big, you know, big yet.
No, and it was 86 where she broke through with Control. You think maybe Michael would have let his little sister hang around?
Maybe she. I don't know. Maybe she had a test that day or something at school. But
I was actually thinking, too, about a couple other people who weren't on there. I didn't think of Janet, but that's a good point. But Prince isn't on the song.
Yeah, you know, Prince, interestingly, was invited to be part of it.
Yeah.
Apparently, he turned the offer down. I think there's a couple of conflicting things. He couldn't do a guitar solo at one point that somebody suggested that he wanted to play a little more. Couldn't do it.
I read that he didn't want to record in the same room as everyone else because he was that shy. That was a quote from Lionel Richie last year. I think that may be the main reason. It could have been different factors. But Lionel was saying in this interview that he kind of was thinking, well, it's Prince. He's going to do what he wants. Maybe he'll show up. Maybe he won't. So I don't think he was that surprised about that. The other big name, you might think, 1985, she's not on there, Madonna.
No, interesting that Madonna wasn't. You know, I don't know if it was because – you know, who knows? I mean, it could have been everything from, and obviously Madonna has been criticized for this through her career. Maybe she wasn't, you know, maybe she's not as good a vocalist and people thought that she couldn't hold her weight or.
I was on Madonna fan blogs checking this out. I figured who would know better than Madonna fans.
Oh, yeah.
I think it, again, sort of different stories, but it sort of seems to come down to that she wasn't fully established yet as a sort of quote unquote legitimate artist. She was sort of a novelty element with the way she dressed at the time. And maybe they thought, you know, her getting in a room with some of these acts that had been around for 20 years, she just wasn't on that level, even though Cyndi Lauper was.
You know, funny, so people
kind of conflicting about that.
I remember people thinking, you know, Cyndi would last way longer than Madonna.
Right.
And Madonna won, I guess, the long game. Madonna also kind of won the short game, too, because after 4 weeks at number one for We Are the World, who knocks them out of the top spot on the Hot 100 except Madonna?
Right.
Crazy for You took the number one spot away from them, so Madonna got the last laugh. But back to We Are the World, of course, so that song has this super group of musicians who record the night after the American Music Awards in 1985. This single really came around because, you know, Harry Belafonte was really the architect of it, and he wanted to do something from black artists to really raise some funds for devastating famines that were happening in Africa. They were going to do a concert. Didn't think a concert would raise enough money, so they had the idea of a charity single, which they really got from our friends over in the UK the year before. A lot of the British supergroup Band Aid came to town and did the song Do They Know It's Christmas, and that song was a massive hit in the UK, raised a ton of money for those same kind of efforts, and so lo and behold, Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie come together to write this song. Quincy Jones is the producer on it, and it becomes We Are the World. Quincy, interestingly, as he was producing the song, you know, when you think about the first time really that anybody has tried to get all these massive musicians in there, I mean, again, talking people at the height of their powers. I mean, Michael Jackson alone on, you know, this song is incredible. You've got Diana Ross from, you know, pulling Motown legends up and Stevie Wonder, Bruce Springsteen. You have to think that, you know, everyone has their little, you know, I want to record this way and I don't want this and I don't want that. And so famously, when Quincy Jones invited everybody, he gave them the infamous line to check your ego at the door.
Right.
Which I think is just, you know, obviously one of those kind of iconic lines in music history that, you know, this isn't about you. This isn't for your record. This isn't for your appearance. This is to raise money. And really, no reports of any infighting, you know, anything like that, which is kind of amazing in itself.
Yeah, when it's for a charity like that, I think it makes it much easier for people to think that way. Maybe at an award show when it's just ego at stake. But when you know you're coming together just to help people, that is the main cause you're there. That's got to be the main catalyst to make people think, you know what, absolutely. I'll take my line, you take yours. Let's make this not about us, but for the people this is going to be helping.
Yeah, definitely. And the single was a huge hit. Interestingly, something that you almost wouldn't think that would even happen today. On Good Friday in 1985, which, again, Good Friday is coming up
right
this week. Back in 1985, over 5,000 radio stations around the world played We Are the World at the same time. Like, imagine, you know, going on Spotify or iTunes or whatever, and there was one song you could listen to for that period of time. I mean, just the universality of it, that's crazy. I mean, everywhere around the world, Africa, Europe, you know, obviously United States, playing one song all together for a common cause.
Yeah, and chart-wise, too, you don't see too many songs with this kind of history. It had 4 weeks at number one on the Hot 100, starting April 13th, 1985, 2 weeks at number one R&B, 2 weeks at number one adult contemporary. And here's where it really shows you just how absolutely big it was, and also how there were so many different acts from different genres. Number 27 on the mainstream rock chart, and even number 76 at country. So you mentioned Waylon Jennings before. There sort of was enough for everyone to at least kind of sample it if it had at least an act that your listeners and your genre might know. But beyond that, it was just such a cultural moment. You weren't born yet, Trevor.
Correct.
For another 6 years, but I was in fifth grade. And I remember it was sort of near the end of the school year that the whole documentary came out. You can watch that now. It's on YouTube. It's out. I think it came out a little bit after. It was, I guess, near the end of the school year in science class. Mr. Murray, the cool science teacher, one day we just watched the video. We didn't. It had nothing to do with science. It wasn't like how a song is recorded. He didn't even try to make it seem like this is a lesson. It was just, this is the biggest thing. He was a big music fan, so I think he just realized how big the song was. And we just watched it. And I wasn't even fully into music yet. Around 14 is when I got more like really into pop music. But I could just sense that this was something that doesn't usually happen in music. I could just tell how big it was. And 32 years later, we're sitting in a room full of Billboards here talking about it still.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously had an impact in its time as well. You know, a huge award winner, winning the Grammy Award for Record of the Year, Song of the Year, some American Music Awards as well. So, obviously, you know, very well received critically, commercially. And it really gave birth to, you know, sort of this charity all-star movement that really has took off in the late 80s and early 90s. You know, some of the songs that We Are the World sort of launched forward, That's What Friends Are For, you know, the Dionne Warwicks, Stevie Wonder, right. Gladys Knight, Elton John song that raised money for the American Foundation for AIDS Research. You have even the King Holiday track, which I guess most people probably don't know now, but it's a song came out in 86 to celebrate the first Martin Luther King holiday. People on that include a pretty new Whitney Houston, New Edition, El DeBarge. And even, you know, through the 2000s, I mean, a few years ago, I guess now, maybe a decade ago in 2008, the Just Stand Up song for Cancer that had Beyonce, Mariah Carey, Miley Cyrus, Rihanna, Carrie Underwood,
that was one of
others
the, that,
come together.
That might be the last really high charting song of that nature that's done that. It got to number 11 on the Hot 100. But yeah, that was same kind of thing. It's just kind of cool to hear all these acts at once because most people are fans of all these artists. It'd be like a movie where they had like every big movie star in it.
Yeah, so it's basically Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
but even bigger.
Or an all-star game in sports.
Yeah. And I mean, the fact that, you know, I mean, it's just an incredible effort, again, like just in terms of resources and timing and, you know, everybody's doing every which way and around the world and how are we all going to get together. And the fact that, you know, not only is it successful in terms of chart position, but it's raised, I mean, millions and millions of dollars have been raised through this kind of thing.
More than $100 million.
So it's just awesome to see, you know, again, that artist thought of that. I mean, Harry Belafonte and Band-Aid came with that idea and that we're still seeing the effects today. And We Are the World in particular, you know, has really hung on most people as kind of the hallmark of that. And so much so that 25 years after the original was recorded, of course, there was the Haiti earthquake disaster in early 2010. And, you know, people got together and said, we should do something for this. And what better way to celebrate? You know, Michael Jackson had just passed about 6 months before. They re-recorded We Are the World 25 years after We Are the World. Artists for Haiti came together, and it's kind of interesting to see like who some people stuck around. Actually, some people who were in the original are in the new version.
We're going to close with a clip of this with the first line from the song because it's someone who you recognize, but you listen now, he sounds so different as the first vocalist on that song.
Oh, 100%. Handpicked by Lionel Richie himself to sing the opener.
The song got to number two on the Hot 100, so most people don't remember that. The original is always going to be the classic.
Yeah.
But big hit in its own right, 2010.
And they pay tribute to Michael. Like we said, who had just passed. They kept his course, and nobody stepped in to overtake. They did a little duet with Janet. I thought it was nice of Janet.
There she got on.
Ended up, you know, eventually on a We Are the World track. But yeah, awesome to see that, you know, again, from its heyday in 85 to modern day, that song has stuck around and done so much for so many.
And just in case Mr. Murray, my fifth grade science teacher, is listening, or anyone from the school department from that era, I don't want to make it seem like he only just played us music and goofed off. He was a really good teacher, taught us the elements. I learned all the elements. I'm not sure I could still remember them.
I'm sure that the statute of limitations has run out on that. Next week, we are going to have, of course, another fun-filled edition for you, counting down our favorite Hot 100 Top 10 songs.
I'll talk about my social studies teachers next week.
Gary will bring up his social studies teachers. I'll be bringing up a brand new song that should make a Hot 100 appearance next week. I know people have been waiting for this song really since the last One Direction album. Harry Styles' long-awaited first solo song, Sign of the Times. Maybe a nod to Prince, who knows. We'll see you guys. Hope you have a good week. Thanks for joining us again for another week on the Chart Beat podcast. As always,
take it away, Justin.
There comes a time when we hit a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying.
Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life,
the greatest gift of all.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.